WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. You know, I usually like wear sponsored gear and like put my Chicken Palooza shirt on and whatnot. But we're doing a Maryland Crab Cake Tour and Brewery Tour. I probably should get some cool little sound effect for that. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Goodwill, Window Nation, and the Restaurant Association of Maryland. Restaurant Week is coming up, but I like broken out, like old school stuff. Heavy Seas gave me a Putin Drinks light beer shirt, and I think it's kind of funny in a sort of macabre way, but nonetheless, this was given to me at the beginning of the inspiration for 31 breweries. And now that I start looking at these breweries, I mean, Luke Jones has some places up near him, you know, big trucking in different places where we could go and have a beverage. And I know he and his family go out sometimes down in the valley of PA and have a beer. Luke, I usually drink out of my my coal roofing mug, but I found this mug the other day. And this was this is a spring training baseball mug. There was a place called Nestor's Gourmet Deli in Boca Raton, Florida, when the Orioles, this little plastic cup, not microwave safe, I don't think. I think it would melt. But this place is out of business. So they predicted I was going to go out of business a lot. But this is the Gourmet Deli. So I'm drinking out of this today. My Rofo coffee. How are you? You're doing double duty, aren't you? Listen to, I mean, Orioles in a race. Lamar. Preseason football. dude, how are you, man? How you holding up here? It's day one of I told Chloe, who's just been the most wonderful intern of all time, I said, you know, when Luke goes back to training camp for year 14, I said, it's a little like first day of school. And you know what that's like. You were a teacher.
No question about it. It's busy, but good busy. It's funny. You just mentioned, I mean, it's been 14 training camps for me. I had the privilege of covering the last two in Westminster. And I'll say this, and I think the biggest thing you learn when you cover training camp after training camp after training camp is not to read too much into what's going on in those summer practices, because, boy, I could give you a whole list of guys that I would be excited about or really down on and then look really silly just a couple weeks later, because that's just the nature of the beast. But I enjoy it. I still very much enjoy it. But, boy, I still miss those days in Westminster, that spontaneity that anyone, you know, if you had a half day off work, whatever you could do, you just say, hey, let's hop in the car and let's go to McDaniel. You know, let's go and, you know, watch practice and, you know, get a bite to eat afterwards and enjoy Carroll County and all that. I miss that. I still miss that. I still think the organization, and look, this is something that happens everywhere in the NFL. I mean, there are very few spots like what Pittsburgh still does in Latrobe.
You could drive
to Latrobe. There aren't many.
That's
such
a postcard, literally.
That's
right?
Such a dying breed now, unfortunately. But I really do think teams and the Ravens, as much as it's fun and they've been able to accommodate, and they did have a nice atmosphere on the first day of practice. You know, it's usually approximately 1,000 fans. It depends how many people are in each car that they're able to park. But you know, I do miss those days. But I still very much enjoy it, and you know, I think the nice thing for the Ravens, unlike last year, where Lamar Jackson gets COVID first day of camp, and you know, you just think everything else that ends up happening as the preseason goes on. Well, on day one, anyway, it was uneventful in a good way. You know, it was a pretty routine, slow ramp up kind of practice. In fact, I equated it to if you've ever seen their pregame routine, their practice almost felt like that. It was lots of reps against air. They didn't do a whole lot of 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 because they're trying to ramp up a little more slowly. And part of that's by design, and part of that's just what the NFL has become. You know, Calais Campbell joked about it on report day that, you know, this is training camp 15 for him. And my goodness, he remembers two-a-days. He remembers full pads and contact on day one. And I mean, now that's just unheard of. So he reminds that, yeah, these young guys have it better than they think. But for the Ravens, though, you know, they still have the PUP guys, you know, Ronnie Stanley, Peters, Dobbins, and Edwards. We did find out Gus Edwards. You know, it's not looking promising for him at the beginning of the season. So it turns out he's actually further behind than J.K. Dobbins even. But, you know,
that
waiting
sounds
on
like where Boyle was last year. Sort
yeah,
of
I mean,
place, right?
Right, right. And that's why I've been saying all along throughout the offseason, let's just take pause. I mean, I think this is going to be a good football team. I think this is going to be a playoff team. I actually like them to win the division because I think the Bengals are going to really, you know, look at their schedule and what they're going to deal with being the Super Bowl runner up and everything that that entails. But there's still so much unknown with how these guys are going to come back. You know, healthy enough to play is not the same thing as healthy enough to thrive. So that's where I just look at some of these guys coming back from injury and just say, let this play out. I think the key word for this preseason is going to be patience in a lot of ways. The ramp up at the beginning, some of these guys coming back from injury, you have a new defensive coordinator, you have some young guys in certain position groups like wide receiver where, hey, they need James Prochet and Devin Duvernay and Rashad Bateman to step up because, well, they haven't signed a veteran wide receiver to replace Hollywood Brown. So patience is going to be a virtue in that way. So, you know, doesn't mean I don't think they're going to be good or potentially be really, really good, but there's still a lot of unknown. But the good news is, again, get through the first day. Everyone reports, you know, that Ben Cleveland sounds like he didn't pass his conditioning test, but it's not like they have a laundry list of guys dealing with that. You know, they've got the PUP guys, but, you know, Lamar's practicing. There's been, from a football standpoint, business as usual. You know, we'll see if they can get something done. I think if they do get a contract done, to me, it's going to be sooner rather than later because the closer they get to the season, he doesn't have an agent to push the final details of an extension across the finish line. So, you know, from that standpoint, we'll see what he has to say. But overall, you know, an uneventful day one, which I can actually recall. I guess this was my second training camp, which was 2010. That was the year Dominique Foxworth tore his ACL the night before the first day. So you can have something like that. You can have Lamar having COVID last year at the beginning of camp. So nothing like that, which I'm sure was music to John Harbaugh's ears. That's for sure.
Luke Jones is here. He is always there at training camp in Owings Mills, as well as at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, with a little double duty with the Rays and the miraculous Orioles. What are you making of all this? I remember a day because sit up on my lap, little Luke. Uncle Nestor tell you a story. I don't know where you were in 96, 97, but that day when Cordell Stewart slashed his way back and the Orioles clinched against the Mariners, you know, I went to both of those games that day, and it was one of those incredible Baltimore sports days that will never be replicated in that way because they played that way. But your experience a little bit of that sort of magic that when the baseball team is relevant and you can't wait to get to the ballpark and all that, and they had their own issues. But I mean, come on, dude, you left a life of teaching fifth graders to come do this a long time ago. You have had rare occasions where this has gone on, but there really is something interesting with the baseball team that's going to go beyond if they lose six of their next eight, and they're susceptible to that, certainly with losing pitching, right, that could happen. But I think they're going to hover now. I mean, it's starting to look better than they're going to go 2-12 at some point, you know, and screw it all up and only win 76 games somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it's really feeling that way more and more. I mean, look at this Rays series. I mean, you have Ramon Urias hit the monster home run in the bottom of the eighth on Tuesday night. I mean, even in losing fashion, Jorge Mateo hits the game-tying homer on Wednesday night. You know, you have a situation where, yeah, they've held their own against the Rays. And we talked about this with the series at the Trop right before the break. They lost 2 out of 3. They had a chance to win 2 out of 3 in that one. Same with the Yankees series. They're not having that 8-2 stretch where you say, oh, wow, they're taking off, but they're holding their own. And this team just has an uncanny ability to perform in the late innings. You'd like to see the offense come alive a little bit earlier in games at times, but it's the nature of the beast.
That wouldn't be Oriole magic, though.
Yeah, you know exactly, I mean? Exactly. But you look at so much of their profile. You know, you look at the run differential. You look at some of the other, you know, their record in close games. It's not as fluky as you think. I mean, think back to the 2012 team, and we've done a lot of comparing this team to the 2012 team because there were no expectations for that. Not that the Orioles were quite as awful pre-2012, but they weren't good. You know, there was no thought that that was going to happen, that they would win 90 plus games. But that team had a lot of fluky things go their way. I mean, they were what? I think they were 29-9 in one run games. They were like 16-2 in extra inning games. They had a lot of stats where you'd say, wow, that's not sustainable. You know, their run differential didn't really match their record. This team, it's not as though they have these unbelievably dynamic numbers in that way, but their numbers kind of profile to say how they're playing isn't quite as fluky statistically as you would think. That tells me they actually are pretty decent. You know, they're not there yet. They still have work to do. And you know, losing Tyler Wells potentially with a back, oblique, whatever it ends up being as far as, you know, MRI and further testing, that hurts. But at the same time, as I texted with you on Wednesday night as he was leaving the game, they were going to be shutting him down or at least tightening up the reins anyway. Because remember, this is a kid who was a reliever last year as a Rule 5 pick. He had Tommy John surgery a couple years back. You know, he didn't have a 2020 minor league season. It's not as though you can just say, oh, he's going to throw 160 innings and you're not going to ask any questions. That's just the nature of the beast in today's game. I know some people go nuts with the arbitrary innings limits and pitch counts. And believe me, there are times where that bothers me too, but you got to be careful because, again, as fun as this isn't the end game. This isn't the culmination. This is the beginning. Hypothetically, right? I mean, you're hoping that this isn't the high point.
Find out in the next couple of days where they are and how they feel about this. And look, it was one thing a month ago to talk about it when they're on a 8-game winning streak, wherever they were, you start to get excited about it. But then to say, well, where are they going to be in a month? And, well, okay, well, here we are. And I don't say they're going all in or dealing DL Hall for, you know, so I mean, they're not doing anything, nor should they. But it is going to be interesting to ride this out to see that they get a real pennant race here, because I'm starting to smell it a little bit, because they're not looking fadey right now, right? They look a little bit more feisty and surgy than fadey. I don't know where that surge is coming from in regard to pitching, and we could talk about that all day, but I think they could all hit a little better. I mean, I've seen better out of Mullen, certainly seen better out of Hayes. I mean, so I think there's still that hot bats thing that could happen for them that you mentioned that is their strength. Not probably is their strength, other than the defense, which is outstanding. I think that these things can hold up in a place where six teams make the playoff. You know, we're in. I mean, I've been talking to Clark Judge about the 79 Orioles and the. You know, like you have one shot. You know, this is a whole different tournament, really, that they're involved in now than baseball fans are used to. And the math, and you're the math guy, adding another team into this, they're in it. They're in it to be able to play in October, and if they play this way, and then go win games they need to win in September. But at least you're there to maybe you go 15-8, you know, or a stretch like that, and that'll be good enough. That would be good enough in September.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, again, if you're asking me to bet on the Orioles compared to the other wild card contenders, you know, I'm still. Yeah, there's still some limitations that this roster has, and again, what happens with Wells? What does that mean as far as, do you finally get DL Hall back up here?
How am I the optimist and you're the pessimist?
I'm not being a pessimist. I know. I'm just.
I had the Rays guys on this week. They tell me the Rays stink. The Red Sox stink. Everybody stinks.
Well, I was just. But you didn't let me finish. You know, they have some very clear limitations with their roster. At the same time. Boy, the Red Sox, I mean, it feels like the wheels have just completely fallen off for them. You know, you keep waiting for the White Sox. I mean, you know, there's so much talk with Tony La Russa, and I mean, we've seen him make weird, almost bizarre managerial moves throughout the season, you know, intentionally walking guys with 1-2 counts and weird things like that. You know, I mean, Cleveland, I mean, they're right there. I'm not going to disparage them, but, you know, they're a few games over 500. I think the interesting teams right now for me, and they're the teams kind of leading the way from a wild card standpoint now, is Toronto post the Montoya firing and you know what that's meant for them as far as seemingly getting going. And you know, Seattle, they've come back to earth a little bit since that long winning, you know, they had a longer winning streak than the Orioles, but you know, what's that going to mean for them? You know, how are they going to sustain that? But I'll say this, you know, we know that the trade deadline's less than a week away. You know, do they move Mancini? Do they move anyone else? You know, what does that mean? You know, if they move Anthony Santander, you bring up Kyle Stowers, you might not have any drop off whatsoever. I mean, they need to get Stowers up here. I mean, I believe he's leading the International League in extra base hits. I mean,
you'd say that's the most likely thing to happen here this week, right?
I mean, the thing with Mancini is I just don't know how much value's there in comparison to, you know, holding on to him. You know, they're not going to re-sign Trey Mancini. I don't know if Trey Mancini really wants to stay here because he sees the writing on the wall in terms of Mountcastle's the first baseman now, and Mountcastle can actually defensively play first base. You know, they're going to want to DH Adley Rutschman when he's not catching, and his bat's really proving more and more that that's justifiable even now, let alone talk in the next couple of years. I mean, you've got other guys coming through the system. Trey wants to be an everyday first baseman. So, you know, he's not a malcontent or anything like that. He'd be an asset
to a good team.
Right. But we also know, Nestor, that teams just don't give up prospects. I mean, even look at the Benintendi trade, the Yankees acquiring him Wednesday night. You know, what I'm seeing, the early assessment of the prospects they gave up, well, it's not like they gave up these elite guys. So,
but it speaks to the Yankees getting better. Right. And you're getting better, you're getting worse, right? It's rule one, right. Book one, and the Michael Elias Sigma handbook, right?
So this is So Mancini, we'll see. You know, again, I'm not going to be surprised if they move him, certainly. I'm not going to be shocked if he stays put because they just say, you know what, we're not getting enough here and we'll just let this ride. That's where I think it would be interesting to see if they pivot and you look at Santander, who has two more years of club control. As I just mentioned, Kyle Stowers, I'm not sure what else he can prove at AAA Norfolk at this time. Santander is a good player. Is he a guy that's going to be a cornerstone player for them as they're theoretically contending in the next few years? I don't think so. You know, I don't think he's that kind of player. But he has 2 years of club control. And I'll say this, Jorge Lopez, and I'm not picking on him because, you know, he gave up a couple runs in the 10th inning on Wednesday night, but he has 2 years of club control. He's, you know, what, 29, 30. He's had this fantastic first year as a reliever, but is that going to be who he is moving forward? If some team wants to pay a really heavy price for him, Santander, I mean, we've seen Felix Bautista. My goodness, you put him into the closer's role. I don't think I'd blink at this point. That's how dominant he's been. If you can acquire something for those two guys, that I don't think it crushes this year's team. You know, you're rearranging a little bit, but if you can get something that you think is going to really help you over the next couple of years for those guys, then I'm still in the frame of mind that I'm not going to say, no, I'm not doing that. For me, it's, you can still be in this position where you could potentially sell, or I still think there are deals out there. You know, Blake Snell's just an example that's been thrown out there that the Padres want to clear some salary, stay under the luxury tax
threshold.
That costs
money, right? If they're in the race, they need to spend money.
Yeah.
Not necessarily give up prize prospects. They're in the same position, well, but picking up somebody else's.
Sure.
Right.
For me, that would be much more like if I were to say I'm going to acquire Blake Snell, I would be way more excited about that for next year. Now, whatever he gives you this year, and hey, if you can be the third wild card, great. But he's under, you know, you would have him for next year. And that's where I would be really excited. Kind of like the best example I could give you would be when the Orioles acquired Bobby Bonilla in 95. They had him for 96, right? I mean, 95, they kind of hovered around 500, below 500 that whole year.
Give him that deal the Mets gave him in 97.
Yeah.
I can hear Angelo saying, annuity, how many years?
Right. Although I will say, them trading Alex Ochoa ended up not being that big of a deal. At the time, there were people who freaked
Listen,
out.
Listen, of that era, and I know you were a kid, the Sid Thrift era and all that, there's nobody that loves your prospects more than you. And there's nobody that goes to the media people, especially when you don't like your prospects, and loves them even more.
Yeah.
That's the word in baseball, right? And there's none of that in football. This guy stinks, we're going to trade him. In baseball, it's, oh, Alex has incredible upside. We see such potential. I know he's hitting 211 right now at low A, but I can sit here and do comedy on that, right? But a lot of those guys that they blew up, they didn't like their head, or they didn't think that, you know, they had an off the field issue, or they just thought, to everyone in the media, they had 12 prospects all the time. And Ochoa was one of those guys. If they gave him away, meant that they didn't love him all that much, really.
Yeah. I mean, that's not unique to the Orioles. Everyone loves their own prospects, as you mentioned. And that's why what feels different about the Orioles right now, as opposed to previous periods of time where they were their own hype men for their system, it's other people like their system now. Baseball America likes their system. Baseball Prospectus, Fangraphs, go down the list, where you have Grayson Rodriguez, who's still in the top 10 prospects of all of baseball. Gunnar Henderson's moved into that territory. Adley Rutschman has graduated from the prospects list because he's been in the majors for 2 months now. And, you know, since his first 2.5 weeks, has really raked. I mean, look at the extra base hits for him. I mean, he's a player. Is he going to be an MVP? Time will tell, but he's legit. Again, don't look at the full body of work. Look at what he's done since about the first week of June, and you'll see. I mean, you know, the batting average looks better than it does, you know, in its totality, and, you know, the extra base hits, all of that.
Well,
so
he's not the only really good player to come up and go 0 for whatever for a month. I mean, literally. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's
joke about that with Cal Ripken and Brooks Robinson and, you know, probably a dozen Hall of Famers.
Yeah. I've heard different sentiments related to this, but so many people will tell you the biggest jump in sports is going from, you know, you're playing in AAA against quad A talents, former major leaguers are trying to hold on. You know, there's fringe guys, right? And guys that have lots of tricks and, you know, they know how to perform and all that. But then you get to the majors, and especially now, I mean, my goodness, you just on an average night, I was looking at this over the Yankee series, and I was actually saying something to another reporter in the press box that, you know, I was thinking back to 25 years ago where thinking when Armando Benitez would come in the game and light up the radar gun, right? 98, 99, touch 100 on occasion. And over that Orioles Yankee series last weekend, you know, they're each one of those games, you had three or four guys in each game hitting 99 or higher on the gun. I mean, it's just commonplace now. So you don't see as much of that in AAA. So you come up from AAA and you have success there and you think you're ready to go. And it's an adjustment. And, you know, Rutschman's adjusting. There's no question, but it takes a little time to your point. But, you know, they've got other guys like that coming. Maybe not quite as good as Adley, but, you know, Gunnar Henderson. And, you know, you hope DL Hall gets here at some point, although had a rough outing his last time out, but you start to wonder what else does he have to prove at AAA that he can't do in the majors. So other guys are coming. That's why I said I do look at this trade deadline, still looking at it, you know, kind of from both perspectives as far as, you know, not saying you break up the club, but if you can move a Santander for something legitimate and then that opens the door for Kyle Stowers to come up here, I don't think that necessarily even makes you definitively worse. You know, I think it, you know, and in a long-term sense, get Stowers his feet wet, acclimated, and he's ready to hit the ground running next year then too. So, you know, there are a lot of ways that they can play this, and that's why it is interesting. But boy, just to go back to your original point, as far as talking about the Orioles being relevant, as I'm starting to go out to Owings Mills for training camp, that we're even having a meaningful conversation about the trade deadline as far as the different ways that this could go compared to just saying, oh, you're just selling off anyone you can to clear a little bit of payroll and get some Dominican prospect lottery tickets, you know, like they did with Andrew Kashner 3 years ago. The fact that we're not talking in those terms anymore, that's fun, right? I mean, this, if nothing else, even if we're not talking about this team in the second week of September, really having a solid mathematical chance to be a wild card, they're just entertaining. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I say this to you all the time, like, if we're just going to judge our fandom on what the end result is every year, that's really an effort in vain, because most of the time you're going to be disappointed looking through that lens. But in terms of where this team is, knowing that they still have work to do, and I'll continue to say that, and ownership's a big part of this, and certainly you and I have talked about that many times, and we'll continue to talk about that. But in terms of entertainment value, what this team has done over the last 6-7 weeks, I mean, it's been very compelling theater on a nightly basis. I mean, even Wednesday night when, you know, they lose an extra innings, but, you know,
they almost won.
Jorge Mateo sends one into the bleachers in right center. I mean, your light hitting shortstop hits a home run to the opposite field. I mean, go figure. I mean, there's just things happening.
I was
on
the night Belanger hit one. I was there.
Yeah, or Len Sicada in 83, you know, after he's catching behind the, you know, being behind the plate.
Well, yeah, Aparicio hit a couple.
Yeah, so it's just been really fun. And, you know, the craziest thing, and I haven't mentioned this to you, I mean, this has been out there on Twitter, but after wins now, and I don't know the entire genesis behind this, but they've turned it into a little bit of a nightclub in the clubhouse. They have
strobe lights
going. Right? It's hilarious. It's hilarious, and it's just fun. I mean, even for Trey, you know, Mancini, even if by the time someone's listening to this, they've dealt him, you know, even if they've done that, which is entirely possible. You think about how much losing he's done here. And even if he's moved in the coming days and joins a contender and we're watching Trey play in the playoffs, which I'd love to see that for him. You know,
I'd love to see Mike Bordick do that, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But for him to experience this, I mean, you can just tell. I remember talking to Trey, you know, it was, you know, right. I guess it was right before the All-Star break. It was the last game of the Angels series, in fact, you know, when they were in the midst of that winning streak. And it was just, he just kind of looked at it and he's just like, this is amazing. You know, he's talking to some of us reporters who've been around for these very, you know, to put it nicely, lean years, these last few years. And for him, just to see the smile on his face, you can just tell how much he's enjoying this. So, you know, feel good for him, feel good for some of these other young guys who've been just completely crushed the last few years. And boy, you feel good for the fans who have continued, the ones who've remained engaged. And I've said all along, I haven't blamed anyone for tuning out, because it's been a hell of a endeavor trying to stay engaged with this product the last 5 years. But the ones who have, boy, you're getting what you hope is just the start. Let's be clear about that, but starting to get a return on the investment that has been very entertaining and a lot of fun. And again, we got on here to talk about the Ravens, and we did, and we'll continue to talk about the Ravens. But you know, right now it's still,
there's two teams in town.
There are, and it's fun. And you know, you have a chance to, you know, you win the first two games of our Tampa Bay series. And by the way, at Cincinnati for three, at Texas for three, back home to face Pittsburgh for three. So that's nine games.
Yeah, you got to go 7-2, 6-3. You got to go something like that, right?
Yeah, if we're going to be talking about this being something that they're continuing to make progress and not just hovering around 500, you know, you can make some hay here. You've got an opportunity here coming up after this tough stretch against the Rays and the Yankees. So they've held their own over that stretch. Now let's see, hey, you know, go 6-3, go 7-2 over these next three series. And then, boy, then it starts to get very interesting, because you're on the other side of the trade deadline as well then.
Luke will be doing all things Orioles, and including next weekend. I'm going to be at Western Maryland when they're fighting with the Pirates. I'll be out in Pirates country when they're fighting with the Pirates, out west of Cumberland, Yinzanot and Danton and all that. But Luke will be there next weekend as well. We're doing a Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It begins on Monday at Conrad Seafood. My friend Ginger from J.O. Spice is going to be coming over. They make the Conrad Seafood. We're going to be at the market on Joppa between Lock Raven and Pairing. Everybody knows where it is, the original. We'll be doing the show over there on Monday, and then heading over to Red Brick Station to start our brewery tour, which was my first brew pub in my neighborhood in White Marsh, where I lived 20 years ago. I thought Bill was crazy. I hope Bill's still there and crazy, but I know he's going to have some cold beer. So we're going to be doing that on Monday. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We'll be letting ourselves play, giving away scratch-off tickets everywhere we go. Next week, our friends at Window Nation, our friends at Goodwill Industries. Had a great conversation with Lisa Rosiniak about vintage wear and going to shopgoodwill.com/MD. That's the /MD that's important, as well as our friends at the Restaurant Association of Maryland. Restaurant Week coming up in September. I'll be telling you about it all during August. Luke will be telling you about Ravens. You can find him at Baltimore Luke anywhere the internet is served. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.